This episode is brought to you in part by the members of the American Homebrewers Association, who invite you to celebrate Learn to Homebrew Day on Saturday, November 2nd. Spread the joy of homebrewing. Find a Learn to Homebrew Day event near you. Visit homebrewersassociation.org and click Events. That's homebrewersassociation.org and click Events. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 24th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, it's part two of our visit to Little Rock Breweries with Rebel Kettle. Founder John Lee isn't afraid to step out of traditional style guidelines to create beers that are fun, but also very tasty and drinkable. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other basic brewing gear. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter, and thanks to everybody who's done so. Financial supporters this week will see an early release of our Halloween show, which is a lot less Halloween-y than previous years, to tell you the truth. This year, I used bourbon from Pine Bluffs Distilling up in Wyoming to brew an extract bourbon stout that is pretty darn tasty and easy to brew, too. Since last week's show, I brewed a big, dark Belgian ale. It's been a while since I've brewed a Belgian-inspired beer. And boy, that took off. And really, I had to clean up some foam a couple of times. It wasn't to the level of being a disaster, thank goodness. But I think that will be a delicious beer. I also bottled my cider, and it took the extra step to a spike half the batch with cinnamon whiskey. So I'm very interested to see how that turns out. So let's hear a word from our friends and sponsors at Tavor. Tavor is a way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered to you. It's not a beer of the month club where somebody else chooses the beer for you. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com. That's T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com. And download their iPhone or Android app, and you'll receive notifications for two new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, look for selections from Superstition Meadery, 903 Brewers, Garvey's Point, Crane Brewing, Elder Pine, and Ursula. If you're not interested in the beers that you see, no worries. Just skip the ones you don't want. However, when you see something that you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click on it to get it and add it to your crate. And your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. So why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, that's all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. So that's 10 bucks. Again, it's free to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. Thanks to everybody who's done that already. I posted a picture on Instagram this week of some peppers that our friend Ed Nicholson gave me. You may remember Ed from his appearance on Basic Brewing video making his hot sauce recipe with habaneros. Well, Ed gave me a whole bunch of Brazilian starfish peppers, which I had not heard of before, and they're really cool looking. And he also gave me a few ghost peppers and a bunch of Carolina Reapers, which at least at one time were the hottest peppers in the world. We're talking 1.5 million Scoville units. When he came over to make the hot sauce a few years ago, I tried a teeny little piece of the Carolina Reaper flesh, and boy, it lit me up. It's very, very hot. So I've been wanting to play around with fermented hot sauce. The hot sauce that I've been using uses vinegar and is not naturally fermented. And, you know, when in the middle of a pepper growing season, when you're pulling peppers off every week or every day, it's a great way to crank out a lot of tasty sauce in a short period of time. However, now that fall is here and my habanero plant is slowing down in its production, I want to see if I can do a lactic fermentation to make some hot sauce that way. Right now, my plan is to put together a mix of my habaneros with the starfish peppers, the ghost peppers, and the Carolina Reapers, and then add some carrots, onions, and garlic, as I usually do with the standard hot sauce recipe that I use from Ed. And if you haven't seen that recipe, it's really a delicious recipe. Go to YouTube and search for Basic Brewing and Habanero, and you can see two versions, the original stovetop version and then the Instant Pot version as well. Anyway, my plan is to make a brine, chop up the ingredients, and then let nature take its course to see if I can get a lactic fermentation. So I'll keep you updated on that, so stay tuned. Hey, good news from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. From now until the end of October, High Gravity is offering free shipping on beer and wine kits. Go to highgravitybrew.com and check out the massive number of kits that are available. For example, just in the High Gravity beer kits, you have some beers like Boggy Bottom Barley Wine, Dave's Double Dog Dare You IPA, Desiree's Cream Ale, Double Major Belgian Style Double, and that's just a random selection of beers that I'm apparently in the mood for big beers. And many of these recipes have been featured at Pippin's Tap Room there at High Gravity, so they're taste-tested by the public before they get to you. And on the wine side of things, High Gravity has wine kits from the super fancy to the simple sippers. So making wine is super easy with a wine kit if you've never done it before. Kind of like making Kool-Aid almost and just adding yeast to it. It's a little more complex than that, but not much compared to brewing beer. And if you compare the price per bottle, it makes a lot of sense to make your own wine. And until the end of October, shipping on beer and wine ingredient kits is free. Check it all out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Free shipping on beer and wine ingredient kits until the end of October at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, as I said last week, I'm so happy I finally got down to Little Rock to visit with a couple of breweries down there. Just down the block from Lost 40, who we heard from last week, is Rebel Kettle. Now, John Lee served me some tasty fun beers that, you know, kind of bend or break style guidelines, but I have to say that the Crowler of Oktoberfest that I took home was a really solid example of the style. So, Rebel Kettle can brew outside the lines, but they're also very good at hitting the style marks, too. John Lee, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, thank you for having me, James.
Where are we at?
We're at Rebel Kettle Brewing Company here in Little Rock.
We are surrounded by big, beautiful stainless steel fermenters. And your tasting room out front is really nice, and I took a look at the menu. The food menu is also looking good. But talk about the brewery. Where did the name come from, and then what got it into your head to start a brewery?
Okay, so back in 2013, I started putting this together. I mean, I was just homebrewing in the garage, and it kind of came to me that we really didn't have many breweries here in Little Rock. And then at that time, I mean, we had obviously Diamond Bear, Beano's, and, I guess it was Bosco's then. And so those are the only three that we really had. But no one was really kind of pushing the envelope with the beer styles and stuff that, I mean, you know, I was seeing all around the country. So my plan was to become actually the first nano brewery. And I was typically gravitated towards, styles that, you know, weren't usually, your norm. So, I was really infatuated with breweries like Dogfish Head and Scar City. They were doing these fun and funky things, and so these are kind of the beers that I was brewing, and really kind of wanted to get that out there.
So you wanted to live life on the edge?
A little bit, yeah. And so that's essentially where the name came from. It really means a rebellion against average beer.
And I read in Brian Sorensen's book on Arkansas beer that that you started this idea with a pumpkin beer. Is that right?
Well, kind of, yes. There was a, I'm trying to think which festival that was back in 2013. I do believe it was the Arkansas Times Craft Beer Festival. My now business partners, they tasted a beer called Red Rum Pum, which is an Imperial Amber Ale that's aged in Caribbean rum barrels. And so they were kind of blown away by it, and this actually brought them to me. And from there, this is where Rebel Kettle began.
You're aware of the reputation that pumpkin beers have nowadays. Everybody, you know, they make jokes about, oh, my God, it's pumpkin beer season and all that. But done well, a pumpkin beer can be a good thing.
Absolutely. And the funny thing about Red Rum Pum, I mean, I set out to make a pumpkin beer that I actually enjoy. And so, obviously, it needed to be high ABV and kind of low on the spice and let some of the other flavors kind of carry it through. So, I mean, it's a little sweet in the finish, kind of cover up that big alcohol percentage where it's usually around about 11%. And the rum barrel character, obviously, it covers a lot of that spice note, too. So it's a really nice blend.
So we've got a flight of four beers in front of me. And what do we start with first?
Well, I wanted to start with the beer that I didn't want to brew. So this is our blonde ale called Working Glass Hero. When we first started, Jason, Kim, and I, my business partners, when we first started putting this together, they felt that we needed that kind of that flagship crossover kind of beer in a craft beer. Turns out they were correct. Working Glass Hero has been our number one seller since day one. It is the one that you will probably see out in the market mostly. And Jason loves to throw it in my face that he was right, still to this day. But, I mean, he's right, though. I mean, for the drinkers here in Little Rock, this is the one that can bring them in and then kind of introduce them to what else we do.
So this is your gateway beer?
Absolutely it is. And it's been a huge hit for us. We recently started putting in cans for sale out of the brewery. They're doing very well. And we just continue to keep pushing it outside in the market, and it just continues to grow.
Well, it's tasty. It's nice and clean and super drinkable. You know, it is not a challenging beer at all, but it's not meant to be. And I could drink a bunch of that on a hot summer day or a cold winter night. I mean, it's just a year-round good beer. Talk about the recipe. You're talking to home brewers, you know, around the world, so they want to know details.
Okay, it starts with a pale ale malt base, and there's a little bit of wheat in there. Aside from that, Willamette hops up top, and that's it. I mean, it's a very simple, straightforward beer.
What's a hopping schedule like?
Let's see. We do a 60 and a 30. Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. Again, very light. Comes in at about 15 IBU. Mm.
Well, it's very nice. Like I say, very clean. I keep wanting to drink more of it. A friend and I are headed from Hot Springs back home, and so you know, I've got my designated driver out in the room there. But still, you know, there are a few bathroom stops on the way, so don't be offended if I don't drink all of these generous samples.
That's quite all right.
So talk about your path. I mean, how's it been? I mean, since you got started, you know, what were the challenges in getting a foothold, or did you gain a foothold right away getting into the business?
I'd like to say we did. I mean, the biggest challenge was actually opening. I mean, it took us 8 months to start the build out back in 2015, so we weren't able to open until March of 2016. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I mean, everything's gone very well. When we first started putting this together, I mean, we weren't going to have a restaurant, and we felt it was kind of necessary, and I'm glad we did, because that actually has helped bring people in and kind of to get noticed the beer. I mean, when we first opened, we opened with, let's see, was it 4 7 barrel fermenters and 2 7 barrel brights, and right off the bat we were undersized. I mean it was just like we couldn't make enough beer, and so shortly after that we brought in a 15, and since then we've brought in, geez, how many more? We've actually taken out most of we took out three of those sevens, which they went over to a sour program that we started here back in January, and then to replace those we brought in 15. So yeah, we've basically doubled in capacity, geez, just this year.
And it's a family environment. I walked in and there were kids, you know, in the dining room, and you know, it is a very welcoming environment.
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Jason Kim and myself and my wife, you know, we all have kids, and you know, I mean, it's definitely family. It's a family business, basically.
Talk about your system. We're sitting here, like I say, surrounded by stainless. Talk about your system.
It's fantastic. So it's a 7-barrel Premier stainless system. It's done everything, you know, that I can imagine. I mean, we used to have a small, basically, pilot system, which is about it was a 1/2-barrel system, and it got to the point where we just weren't using it because it was easier us for to do 200 gallons than it was to do 15.
And so you can, is it flexible in doing everything that you want to do and, in, you know, bending the styles that you want to bend?
For the most part, I mean, you know, steam would be nice, of course. You know, we could do some step mashes and stuff like that. But, you know, we've made it work. We've kind of had to kind of reconfigure it so we can do kettle sours, which we do a lot of. But other than that, though, I mean, it really works great.
Talk about the beer number two. This is a cloudy beer.
No, yeah, it for sure is. That is our Southern Snake Charmer Mango Habanero IPA.
Wow. There's a ton of fruit on the nose.
It is. There's a whole lot of mango in there. There's about 4 pounds of habanero in there. Kind of gives you a nice spicy finish in the back, but it is kind of like second to the fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's you might be scared of a habanero beer, but this is you do get a lot of the fruit on the front end, and there is, when I sipped it the first time before I knew there was habanero in there, I said, "Ooh, this is spicy."
Right.
So it's not a pepper heat. It's more of kind of a black pepper than like a pepper.
Well, you also may be picking up, there is a little rye in there. So, I mean, it's basically a Pilsner base with some rye and also some honey malt. Basically, only flame out hops. I mean, we're going for those big, juicy hop aromas, using Amarillo Citra, and I believe Econaut was in there. But that's the goal, is kind of keep it juice forward.
And you've achieved it.
Right, thank you.
How did you, first of all, let's talk about the fruit, the mango. How did you use the fruit in the beer?
Okay, it's re-fermented mango puree, basically. So, you know, a few days in, probably 3 or 4 days in, we'll push the fruit on and let it just go ahead and ferment out.
In a secondary fermentation kind of way.
Yeah, we actually do it during primary and then typically before dry hopping, and that way we can pull. But, you know, we try to leave it on the fruit for about 2 weeks.
And what about the peppers? How do you get that pepper in there?
The pepper actually goes in the flame out. So we basically just run it during the whirlpool and let it, you know, so all hot side on the peppers.
So how much pepper per barrel, or is there a, you know, if you're a homebrewer and you're thinking, you know, how much habanero can I put in there?
That's the funny thing is, I mean, I probably would have liked a little bit more heat and pepper character this year, but again, peppers in general are going to be, you know, you're never going to know what you're going to get. I mean, we recently did another beer that we do called Hell Camino, which is a collaboration with a local metal band here, and it's a porter, Chipotle porter, and I did 10 pounds. So it was 4 pounds of poblano, 3 pounds of jalapeno, and what's the rest there? Almost 3 pounds of habanero. So, and that one's definitely got some spice kick to it, but that's meant to be. I mean, with the name Hell Camino.
Oh yeah, and is it seeds and all?
Yes. Yeah, basically just process them. We'll bag them, and then, again, we'll just run them in the whirlpool.
Wow, that's really nice. And talk about the hopping strategy, because it's interesting because you get the mango, and then you get the hops in there, and habanero peppers do have a juicy or a fruity flavor. Before you get the heat, you get this nice fruity characteristic, so that all blends in together. You know, it's kind of a fruit salad in a good way. Of a beer, so talk about the hopping strategy.
We've changed up because, I mean, it's not simply like you would in a homebrew setup, because, I mean, you gotta imagine that, you know, those hops are sitting in, you know, temperatures above 180 degrees for at least 30-45 minutes when you're knocking out. So again, for this beer, We wanted to keep the IBU somewhat low. I think we're in about the 25 to 30 range. But they go in at flame out. We do a short whirlpool, and then we knock out. So again, you know, they're sitting in there for a good 45 minutes or so just to go. But so with a lot of the IPAs, we've kind of changed our strategies. I mean, we're even doing things where we're knocking the kettle down below 180, and then adding more hops. So we're not pulling in those alphas. And that's become a big part of, you know, our IPAs.
Yeah, it's something that that I've begun playing with more, doing hop stands. Yep. I mean, going from home brewing to commercial brewing. In home brewing, you know, we were always taught cool down the wort just as quick as possible, right, you know, to avoid contamination. You know, that's the thing. And so by putting your hops in at the end of the boil and then cooling off as quickly as possible, you're probably robbing yourself of a lot of those, you know, juicy hop aromas and flavors that you're getting, because you're not doing it the same way anymore. So, you know, I think that it's important that homebrewers know that they can play with doing hop stands and doing, like you were saying, you know, reducing the temperature and holding it there, you know, for a while to experiment and see, you know, what kind of juicy character that you can get.
Yeah, I mean, and then playing with different varieties as well. I mean, we keep quite a different variety of hops here, and so we're always playing with combinations and things like that. But again, yeah, I mean, it depends what you're going for. I feel like with a lot of the IPAs, we actually decreased IBUs quite a bit in a lot of them, and we feel like they're better. They come across better to people that, you know, are just kind of getting into craft beer and learning about IPAs. You know, just so there's not that bitterness in your face like it used to be 10 years ago when you get those 1,000 IBU beers. But
and there seems to be kind of a fatigue developing with, you know, IPAs. And, you know, I'm looking at social media and people are saying, oh, I go into a tap room and they've got like 7 IPAs and 1 wheat beer. You know, so that, you know, it seems to be, at least among the accounts that I see, sort of a backlash against, you know, hoppy or, you know, bitter beers. Are you seeing that here now?
Possibly. I mean, again, a lot of the beers that we've kind of experimented with lately are on the sweeter side, and yeah, they've been well received. Let's just put it that way. And I think IPAs are kind of the same way. You know, a lot of people would like, again, had those IPAs several years ago when they were very bitter and kind of threw them off. And I think beer's changing. I mean, you see a lot of influx of these, you know, alkyl waters coming in and stuff like that. And people want those fruity kind of sweet flavors.
Are you guys getting the hard seltzer yet?
No. There's no plan for us to do anything on the seltzer side. We're going to continue to do what we're doing. I mean, here 3.5 years in, we're well over 200 different beers. We try to release a new beer every Thursday. We've maybe missed, you know, let's just say 10 times in 3.5 years, just for various reasons. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, this is the last one that we released, which is, well, I guess you're about to get to, is that Imperial Coffee Donut Stout. Oh, not this one, but, you know, this is one of our biggest sellers so far. I mean, it's been flying, and it's extremely sweet beer. I mean, it was intentionally meant to be a dessert beer. I mean, it finishes at the same gravity as where Working Glass starts.
Wow. Yeah. So spoiler alert, that beer's coming, you know, at the end here. That's got my interest peaked. So what was the biggest challenge for you in going from home brewing to craft beer? Because it sounds like you've still got the homebrewer's mentality of, I want to do this now, and I want to do that now. And, you know, so you're still getting to play. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
It really is. I mean, it's kind of fantastic that, you know, again, you know, we had that small pilot system, and it got to the point where we just weren't using it because it was easier to do this. And we're confident enough now in our brewing skills that we can pretty much do anything. And on this size, I mean, you're talking about, you know, a couple hundred gallons. We're able to move within at least, you know, 6-8 weeks. And so it really is that much fun. And, you know, we keep our staples here, which is about 5 different beers that we try to keep year-round. We do have some seasonals, but, you know, for the rest of it, we just always trying something new. And that was the basis of Rebel Kettle, was trying to use different ingredients, use different processes, and really kind of just make unique beer that people aren't used to getting.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of unique, number three here has a pinkish hue, as Steve and I like to reference from Seinfeld. her cheek. Is there a pinkish hue? There's a hue. this is a fun beer. It's cloudy. It's pink. What do we got?
So we're calling this it's kind of our new series. It's we're calling it this one a blueberry dream ale. We did a strawberry version, and it was also very well received. So it's essentially like you would take and make a let's just say smoothie IPA without the hops, and then just loaded with fruit. And we're only serving them on nitro.
There we go. Yeah, that's the difference. I was like, "Wow, what is that?" And I should have known. I mean, I rarely get nitro beers anymore, but it's the nitro. Really, it's like a fruit smoothie, and it's kind of like one of those the popsicles, you know, that are, I can't remember the name of them, but they're kind of a creamy. Frozen popsicle.
Like the Dream School, because, there is vanilla. It's vanilla and fruit and loaded with a ton of flake grains, essentially.
I'm still sipping. You got to give me details of the recipe while I drink.
it's a Pilsner base. I think we got about 30% flake grains in there as well. We may have thrown some honey malt in there to kind of retain some of that sweetness as well. I'm certain it was probably mashed super high, probably 156, 157, somewhere in there. To kind of retain that sweetness. And then the same process with the fruit. So we're re-fermenting. With this one, we used 442 pounds of blueberry puree. And then I can't even remember the weight on the vanilla, but it was... So there's a lot that goes into these beers, but again, I mean, it's what you get out of them. It what counts, and we really try and like kind of overdo, and then you know, and hopefully we hit. The cool thing, so with the strawberry one, I mean, it was just basically like a same recipe, but with this one, we actually kettle soured it for about 24 hours, so we dropped the pH down to like 3.7. And then we finished the beer out. We were hoping that it would make the blueberries pop a little more. Whether or not it does or not, but, I mean, they definitely come through.
Yeah, I was going to say it's tart, and I was going to ask if that was just from the fruit.
Yeah.
And I think that you need something like that because there's no hop presence in here, but you've got to have something to balance the sweetness. And it's not a syrupy, cloying sweetness. It's a nice, fresh fruit sweetness, but that tartness in there really gives it a balance where it's not overpoweringly sweet. It's just nice and drinkable. It makes it drinkable.
Thank you for saying that, because that's exactly what we were going for. Never having been working with blueberries on that level or that amount, we weren't sure what kind of sweetness that we would bring. We've noticed that, and like, so we do an annual beer called Summer Jam, which is a raspberry sour saison. Well, it finishes super dry, but even when it's really dry, though, the fruit brings a character, even though it's fermented out, it brings a sweetness. I mean, the perception of sweetness. And so with that beer, I mean, it is sour, so it does balance it out. And that's what we were thinking for this beer.
Yeah, it's great. The fruit character is a bit reminiscent of the raspberry tart from New Glarus.
Okay, yeah.
Which is one of my favorite beers.
Yeah.
This doesn't have the... With that beer, there's more of a malt presence, so it's kind of like the crust to the pie. This is more of a fruity thing, but the fruit character reminds me a lot of that New Glarus beer, and that's a big compliment. But because there's a balance there, it's not just super sweet fruit. There is that tart there as well.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, again, the we, you know, with these experimental beers, I mean, you know, we do the best we can, and we've even made beers where, like, we've had to back up and kind of, like, change it completely, but this one kind of came through as expected, and we'll probably continue the series and kind of keep playing with it because they've been so well received. I mean, I think serving them on nitro really helps. It just, you know, obviously enhances the creaminess of the beer, and, you know, keeps people coming back because they can't take crowlers.
Yeah, you probably don't want to. You don't want to package this and let it out of your building, do you?
No, I mean we've talked about it. I mean, we do have a canning line, and there is a. I mean, we could add a nitro system to it, but we haven't, you know, really entertained that idea just yet. I mean, I'd like to eventually, but down the road, let us play with it more and figure out what we're doing, and then maybe we can do those. But
and this is probably a delicate beer, such that you may be concerned about, you know, if someone did take a crowler home and they forgot it in their car and it got warm, and, you know, that would probably at least harm the freshness of the flavor. So, you know, this is kind of maybe one of your babies you want to keep in the house to make sure that it's good.
Yeah, well, I guess I think about all my beers out there kind of like babies the same way. Yeah. Yeah, you wonder how they're treated outside of here, but, you know, you hope people get the experience like they would here, because, I mean, we religiously clean our lines here. We obviously try to make sure that the beer is just tip top when it goes into somebody's glass.
And now we come to the dark one at the end here. This is oh my goodness! Just smelling it, it's roasty, and roasty as far as grain and roasty as far as coffee. All right, talk about this one while I sip.
Great. Yeah, this is a fun beer that started about 8 months ago. I approached John at a community bakery, and then also Jim over at Guillermo's Coffee about doing a collaboration. And it took me that long to finally get this thing in the into the mash tun about 3 weeks ago. So the idea was to basically create a dessert beer, a pastry stout, imperial stout. And so it's a coffee donut imperial stout. It's the recipe was actually based off our annual barrel-aged imperial stout called Black Rain. So took that and basically added, well, I've cut a few things out, but, I mean, it's essentially, it's, you know, pale malt, a ton of roasted barley, chocolate malt, crystal malts. Pretty straightforward there. But and then we added a ton of lactose on top of that for this. OG came in, and I believe was that 1.118, somewhere in there. Just a small beer. And finished out at like 10.42, so bring us right around 10%. We also threw 8 dozen donuts in the mash, and then it was 4 pounds of Colombian coffee that went into the, well, at 195 in the kettle. So,
and was that ground or whole, or
it's ground? Yeah, we bag it and throw it in and just let it basically in the whirlpool, just like we would some other things. But yeah,
it's funny, you know, you can put coffee anywhere in the process, so it's interesting to, you know, hear how people handle it and where people put it.
Yeah, so we do a nitro coffee stout called Business Casual, and we actually use it in the kettle, and then we use it secondary as well. So we feel like we get a better aroma doing it secondary, but we get a better flavor in the kettle. But I don't know. Yeah, again, it's just preference, I suppose.
This is a lot more drinkable than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody, you know, like somebody that knows about brewing, and you tell them, you know, it's a 1040 OG. I mean, FG. I mean, you're going to like, wait, that's crazy, right? No, it actually balances out pretty well. Even though we were right around about 30 IBU. I find it pretty drinkable, other than the ABV.
Yeah, yeah, it's. I would have said that it was around 10-20, maybe, because it is. You know, there is. It's a big mouthfeel, but it's not gloppy at all. And there's enough going on with the roastiness from the grains, and it's not an acidity, but, you know, there's an edge to the coffee and the grain flavor that helps balance, you know, that sweetness. So yeah, what it's really tasty.
Thank you.
And it's, I mean, what do the donuts bring to the beer? Is it more of a novelty, or is there actual donut character in there?
I feel like there's donut character in there. I mean, you know, I mean, maybe it's a novelty, but I mean, regardless, it's a tasty beer. I mean, again, this is the first time we've ever tried anything like this, and I feel like doing this gives me more confidence in doing things like more like this. I mean, just because of the reception it's gotten. I mean, we did 20 cases of cans, and you know, we released them on Thursday, which 3 days ago, and they're almost gone. So yeah. I mean numbers don't lie, and obviously people like it. I mean, I was surprised earlier. I mean, I saw we already had a keg blown of it, and I was just like, wait a minute. I'm like, I mean, you know, we're serving in like 10-ounce pours, and like, that's a lot of pours. Yeah, that is. I mean, so I mean, the public speaks, I suppose, and if this is what they like, I mean, this is what I'll give them.
So we haven't talked about yeast at all. I've forgotten to ask through the whole flight. So what is your? Do you have a one go-to yeast that you kind of stick with, or do you have a range of yeast varieties that you use?
For the most part, we only use two yeast. Our number one is dry English ale yeast, and that's everything that you've tasted, I believe. Yeah. Hmm. I say this maybe because occasionally we'll use 05 on some of the fruit beers, but I'm trying to think if we actually used it on the blueberry beer or not. I can't remember. And that's typically just for simplicity, and then, you know, I mean, a cleaner flavor kind of thing. But in the other one is a kind of a combination of saison yeast. So we have a blend of three different yeast, which is French saison, DuPont, and saison 2. Mm. So, we feed that pitch, and we've actually had that pitch in a brink that we use and reuse and keep feeding. Typically with the blonde ale, we've had it for almost a year now, and so we buy a pitch and just keep using it, and it seems to work really great. Mm. I feel like the 3711, the French saison, is probably taken over, or it does eventually. But you know, again, this is what we use on. A number, and we always typically at least have a few saisons on tap.
And what do you do as far as temperature control on those yeast? Do you do anything with letting the temperature rise and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So with 007, though, we usually run depending on the beer, but we'll usually start in the low 60s and let it come up for the majority of fermentation at 65. And then as it starts tailing off, we'll bring it up to 72. With the saison yeast, it's just free rise. So we try to pitch mid-60s if the weather will let us, and then just let it go. I mean, it'll see temps of about 85 to almost 90. Yeah.
Well, all of these beers are delicious and clean and weird and funky and not in a traditionally, you know, beer favor funky way, but in a playful way, it sounds like that you're not just, you know, going willy-nilly and throwing things into the into the beer. There's a thought process that goes along with how do you make something like this fun but also drinkable.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the most important part, and probably the most fun too, is starting with a thought of a beer and creating the recipe. I mean, whether or not, you know, basically in your head, and then getting it on paper, you know, and going, and then actually seeing it kind of grow, and then what it comes out to be. And hey, did I get it? Did I hit my numbers? Did it, you know, hit the flavor profiles that I was looking for? And even the best part, though, you know, I mean, we've done so many different beers that we can kind of determine, I say, somewhat. I mean, to where it's going to end up. I mean, you know, at least you hope. You know, sometimes it goes awry, but for the most part, you know, if you know what you're doing, or you have idea where it's going to go, it's probably going to get pretty close.
So what's the future for Rebel Kettle? Are you gonna stay small and weird, or
I mean, that's the goal right now, is kind of just grow it slow. I mentioned earlier that we started a sour program back in January. We're hoping to unveil that this winter. We have about four different beers right now. They've one was 100 was a Brett, but the other three were all barrel aged, and they should go into bottles either next week or the week after. So again, hopefully in a few months we'll release those. And then we're also we've also purchased another building in Conway. Oh. So we're looking to open hopefully next year there.
So serving the beer that's made here, or actually brewing there as well?
It'll have its own brewery there too. So the goal would be probably still be brewing the staples like we have here, like Working Glass, Easy Roller, our IPA. Those, you know, like I mentioned, the five beers, and then all the rest will be different.
Well, this has been fun. I'm glad that I'm finally getting into, you know, I've been doing this podcast since 2005, and this is the first, you know, foray into Little Rock that we've done this weekend, and I'm looking forward to coming back.
I appreciate you coming in, and yeah, please do. I'm sure we'll have a bunch of different beers when you do.
Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you.
Well, thanks again to John, and thanks to Becca Bona for helping to set up the interview, and I may have to start detouring through Little Rock on my way to Hot Springs when I go home to visit the family. It was a fun time to visit my old neighborhood. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.